That became very complicated because everything was a priority. The hospitals were a priority. You needed to have the schools to start. You needed to have water running. You needed to have the economy to kickstart. Almost all the reserves of the government through the central bank had been rooted. We had no agency that was collecting taxes. We had no private sector that was functioning. Then we were being supported by the international community through the UNDP, which actually the government had no control over the resources at that time. It was a desperate situation where you could not prioritize. And that's why we had to innovate. Most people actually working as volunteers in the whole country. I think the cabinet ministers were working for a long time without pay. They were only getting the rations of food as their own pay. And then we started, of course, uniting the Rwandans, creating a government that at least works, and starting slowly by slowly putting things in place.
So not only had Rwanda been able to put the pieces back together to some extent and at least function as a state after this crisis, but has actually developed to be sort of a model state in the region since then. What do you attribute that success to?
In as much as we had a terrible, terrible history that went up to the genocide, we are so lucky that we had good leadership. We had lost all our dignity completely. And the leadership that we had was really wanting to regain the dignity that the Rwandans had. So we had again to go back to create our own values, to develop the Rwandanness that everybody wanted, and at the same time to really sacrifice everything for our unity and also progress for everybody without leaving anybody behind. And that's why all our policies, we have the big macro policies, but also we have the small micro policies that reach every ordinary citizen. And we do that in a very inclusive manner. And that's why even for our constitution that we put in place that was taking into account our previous history, was really looking at how women could be included. And we had to bring in all parties, meaning that for any party that wins cannot take it all. It has to take a maximum of 50% of the cabinet. And the party that heads the executive cannot head the parliament. So this way was to include everybody. But we want to own the process. We want to make sure that from the local government level, the people are the ones who own it. So this way then, they are participating. It's no longer a government that comes and they have to wait for it to come and do everything. No, they are the ones who are actually determining what they want to do, or what they want done for them.
It seems that there are many states, not just in Africa, but elsewhere in the world, that are in various states of what we call fragility, or they're enduring some sort of crisis. So what advice would you have to other states that are going through crisis or fragile periods?
I think the first thing is to make sure that you have the whole population united by understanding that they can make it, understanding that they need to take ownership, understanding that whatever waste that is done in their name and it's not acceptable. Transparency and accountability is very, very crucial. Once they believe in themselves, then the rest really would follow. So for me and our own experience is that nothing is impossible. And we can always learn from each other. We have so much that we've learned from other countries, and other countries can also see how we are doing, how we are also implementing our own programs. There is no situation that is the same as the other. Each country is different. The history is different. The issues are different. There is uniqueness in each of the countries. But once you come together and you as members of the society understand your issues, work together to resolve them, and do it in a way that is for everybody, then it works.